you ever wondered about miracles? Would you like to have your spirit uplifted by inspiring stories of the miraculous in everyday life? Expect Miracles does just that. Author Mary Ellen Angel Scribe shares a wonderful compilation of 70 gentle-hearted, true miracle stories sent to her by readers of her Miracles and Good newsletter. A Christmas filled with miracles is also the result of people sharing miracles that have found their way into their lives. These inspirational and touching books are available now at angelscribe.com for just $15 plus shipping and will be personally autographed by Mary Ellen Angel Scribe. Expect miracles, and A Christmas filled with miracles make wonderful gifts and will open your eyes to the possibility that miracles do happen. Expect miracles at angelscribe.com.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And today I was hoping to introduce you to an amazing person, Kimberly Clark Sharp, who is the head of the Near Death Association here. But unfortunately, technical difficulties, and so unfortunately she isn't going to be here, or if she can make it a little later in the show, we'll be excited to welcome her. But we're going to talk about near-death experiences anyway, because I think it's a very fascinating field, and hopefully for those of you who received the newsletter, Angel Scribe newsletter and Atira newsletter, talking about this person in our future show, she'll get the opportunity to experience her incredible wisdom on this subject. But near-death experiences, I have found, are so interesting. People, I have a lot of email that comes in about near-death experience, and of course, Kobler-Ross set some of the foundations for the work that then later became Dr. Raymond Moody's work on life after life and reflections on life after life, which were books that he wrote in the early 70s. And so this work on near-death experience has really been expanded in the last few years. I want to encourage my callers, if you've had those experiences, to call in at half past the hour at 1-877-876-5227. Near-death experiences is a phenomena, and I want to kind of explain it for those who may not know what NEDs are. Near-death experiences are experiences that people who have been usually clinically pronounced dead for a period of time then come back and have talked about similar experiences. Most people experience several different levels of this. They usually see a tunnel. They usually see their body. First experiences, they rise above their body. They're looking back at their body. They all think they look much better than that. And they have the experience of floating, a floating sensation. They may hear exactly what's going on while they have been pronounced dead. And then they start talking about the account of what progresses from there. They usually see a tunnel. They go down the tunnel at a very fast speed. At the other end of the tunnel, they usually see a light. They go towards it. Then they usually see relatives. They may see an illuminated figure. And then they usually have an experience of reviewing their life. And then have the experience of being drawn back. Often they are drawn back or told that they're, you know, it's not their time, so that they can go. They'll they may hear noises, a whooshing sound as they go through the dark tunnel, and then they have the experience of being in an illuminated place. Sometimes they can understand and see the surroundings, and sometimes they cannot. Then they, again, like I said, usually are told that it's not their time or they have something to do. They come back and they often feel like they're sucked backwards through the tunnel, almost like a vacuum cleaner hose sucking on them, and then they pop back into their body and are brought back, sometimes in a aware state, sometimes in a disoriented state, and then they talk about their experiences. Most of the time, Dr. Moody found out that people really were reluctant to talk about it because they didn't, first of all, they were trying to internally analyze the experience. Often they didn't have a frame of reference to deal with the experience. They couldn't, they didn't think anyone would believe them, and so they're very cautious about communicating their experiences. But Dr. Moody started finding out that as he interviewed different patients who had been particularly clinically pronounced dead, that they started finding out that these experiences had similarities, that people who had not communicated with each other would talk of very similar experiences. Most of them were, I don't want to say pleasant, but had positive input. The life review, they would feel everything they'd ever wounded, however they had wounded a person, they would feel it. And if they had made someone have joy, they would feel that joy. So that's another good reason to pay it forward and do good things and experience the joy of the things you did and work on the things that you haven't gotten right so that you don't have to experience all the negative things. But the experiences, the other thing that was profound about it is people who came back from this experience were profoundly changed. It profoundly changed their core belief systems and how they chose to interact with people. So everyone came back with, the biggest change was that everybody came back with a need they felt to do something that would impact many, many people in a positive way. They really had this mind frame that there was a responsibility to society at a bigger level, that they had a mission to help change things in a larger way. And so they started really trying to impact the world in a very, very positive way, realizing that one person's impact is definitely important. And so they all came back with that kind of sense of responsibility. Some, of course, achieved it, and some, I'm sure, are still working on it. It was interesting that all of them really had a sense that some part of them, their spiritual part, and this was a cross-section of many, many people, not the same religion, very diverse backgrounds. I think he did, the first book, I think he did something like 600 case studies, around 600 case studies. And so that it was interesting that they all talked about what that the review was really like an eye-opener of how they had lived, chosen to live their life, how they had listened to people, how they had not listened to people. And the pattern was that this pattern of the tunnel, of the sounds, of the whirling sensation, the out-of-body sensation, to the point of reporting what, if they passed in an operating room, they could tell you what the nurses and doctors were talking about, which really quite upset some of the doctors when they said, you know, were you talking about golfing on the ninth hole and quirping jokes when this person was totally, you know, obviously pronounced dead? You were talking about these things just before or as this person came back. And often in operating rooms, doctors and nurses talk about things that are mundane to reduce the stress of dealing with life and death situations in an everyday moment. So people became became conscious of this experience and very frightened about it at the same time. It's a funny dichotomy. Because of our belief system, sometimes we get caught in how to justify and rationalize something we have no frame of reference for. And the near-death experience, I think, is one of those subjects or things that we have very little frame of reference for if it is outside our belief system of living on or outside of perhaps we've never read about it or looked into it. So if you don't have a frame of reference to say, okay, this thing exists and I'm going to look at it, and really before Dr. Moody's work, you wouldn't have found very much on out-of-body or near-death experience. You might have found out-of-body experiences, but not relating to the process of dying and death. And so within this study, the interesting thing was that people were really conscious of their surroundings. They floated above their body, and they had a perspective about their whole life. I mean, they reviewed their whole life, We're giving, in some instances, like Danny and Brinkley, who wrote Saved by the Light, in his experience, and he's had many near-death experience, because once you get struck by lightning, you tend to have a lot of health issues and side effects because of that experience. So in his particular incident, he just thought he'd lost his mind. He had this experience. There was no context for it. He was very changed. He was on a time, it took him a long time to start recovering, so he had a lot of time, downtime, to think about this experience that happened to him, and literally had no frame of reference. He was raised in the South with a very structured religion, was kind of a wild person outside the lines, had lived a very dramatic life in being in counterintelligence in the service. So to have this kind of near-death experience was certainly outside of, or I would say, of a frame of reference for him. And so, surely by accident, he saw an interview on TV with Dr. Raymond Moody, went to see him, and listened to other people's account, very similar accounts, and then got the chance to talk to Dr. Moody. The thing that I think was very interesting about Danny Brinkley's experience of near death was that he came back with a precognition of the future, which is not something that is written much about in Dr. Moody's first two books, because the frame of reference in the first two books seem to really be on the experience, the personal experience of the person. When Dr. Moody started working with Danny Brinkley, he started talking about the future. He had future visions, and they documented them, and they started waiting to see if these future visions would come through. And if you read Embraced by the Light, Danny Brinkley's book, Saved by the Light, he talks about those prophecies more. But in the experience of near-death experience, it's amazing that as Dr. Moody did this work too, he found out that it wasn't just adults, that children would talk or draw. And how it opened up for another doctor, and I think it's Melbourne, who is actually in Seattle, Washington. He also wrote one totally about children's experiences, because he kept seeing these children that would be drawing the same kind of drawings and yet did not know each other. But all the common thread finally turned out to be that they had all been dead, pronounced dead for a short period of time. And he knew that they couldn't have, you know, had interaction, talk to each other. Some of them were in isolation wards. Some of them were in intensive care. And he started tying this together and communicating with Dr. Moody, and did his own research on children's near-death experience. So the field of near-death experience is really interesting that, also, for many people who have had this experience, when they come back, often they are super sensitive. They may come back with very much psychic abilities. They may be permanent, or they may fade as you are more back into the mundane world and talk yourself out of the near-death experience and really try to, you know, discount or try and let go of the experience. And as I actually got the chance to talk to a few people who had personal near-death experience, and as I talked to one of these people, it was very interesting that this person had died as a result of a reaction to a medication. And when they had their near-death experience, they had the floating sensation. They heard people say, "Oh my God, you know, he's dead." Heard what the nurses said, heard the reaction in the room, and then saw the tunnel, heard a noise, a whirling noise, was drawn through this tunnel toward the light, came out the other side with an incredible feeling of peace. And it's a peace that people really have a hard time describing, because they really feel like in this mortal world, it's not, we don't have anything to compare for. So it's very hard sometimes even for these people to describe their experiences, because often much of what's going on in this near-death state, we don't have a sense or adequate vocabulary for. They can only like it to the sense and peace you get when you're in a sacred space or perhaps you're in the presence of someone you consider sacred, like perhaps Mother Teresa, the Pope, a saint you might be interested in, that almost wrapped in love, unconditional peace and harmony. And it resonates, they say, from inside you outward. It's not necessarily coming from the outer environment. That's one thing that confuses them. It's almost like it starts inside of you and grows outwards, and then everything resonates from outwards back inside of you. And it's a very disquieting moment sometimes are feeling, because they just really don't know how to judge the sensation. So the experience is that they usually see a presence of light. They'll see relatives, sometimes people passed over, people once they know, people that they actually, sometimes they see people they don't even know have passed over, and later they confirm that they have passed over. They often talk about then being in the presence of a being of light. And it's some people see it as Jesus. Some people see it as other deities that they would consider in their belief system. 90% of the time, though, it's a being of light that they don't really see the face or the figure of, and it just expands. And often then these people begin to have other visions. They'll have visions of walking and going towards a school, like or a building of learning, and that they feel like they're in school, that they're seeing a spiritual school or a city of light. And they often talk about this, you know, city of light, that everything, where they see these buildings and they just emit this in beautiful light, this glowing expansion that's just beyond words, that it's a living light, and it has a fluidity to it, and it permeates everything. And they just have these experiences of these realms of spiritual beings that really somehow infuse them with different things. They let go of all judgment, and when they come back, they are really changed forever about their attitude about judgment, how they judge and discern everything in their lives. And they are completely dedicated to impacting and imparting this information to other people in a loving way. Even if they don't talk about their near-death experience, people in their family say they are totally changed. People who have had, like, perhaps, you know, been judgmental and difficult to deal with, they just become passive and passionate about trying to make a difference in the world. They also, one of the interesting things, I talked to someone briefly who had attempted suicide. Because I have always been told in my work that people who commit suicide go to what is called the Cosmic Hospital. And it's a dimension where it may look just like a regular hospital here on Earth, or it may look like a beautiful temple. And there are rooms there. In some places, you may create your own home where you lived in. It looks like here on Earth. And that you are in a state of sleep, almost like a coma would be. And that you're in this place and you're dealing with the stuff that you left behind, the unsolved stuff. That no one is condemned for suicide, that it is that you are taken to a place to heal from this issue. And so that you are nurtured and cared for by other angelic beings, spiritual beings, until your consciousness can take and understand what has happened to you, then you awake and you start dealing with what happened to you, why you did what you did, and how you progress through that experience, and how you gain forgiveness for yourself. And often people who have done suicide keep coming back to the people they left behind asking for forgiveness. And the truth is, most of the time, everyone's forgiven them, but they haven't forgiven themselves. Hi, welcome to the air. Sounds like a beep.
Yes, hi. How you doing? My name
is
Joe.
Hi, Joe.
How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Okay. The reason I'm calling, I can also get a reading.
Oh, well, actually, we're talking about near-death experiences today,
okay.
But I'll be glad to see if I can get anything. So if you'll state your name again and where you're calling from.
Okay. My name is Joe, and I'm calling from New Jersey.
So the first thing, now, I always like to tell people who call in, it's really important. You know you're on the radio, so I have to tell you like it is, and I'll try to do it in a very polite way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Spirit says for you right now that you're undergoing a rearranging in your life. Do you understand this?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So I don't think the dust is settled from that, okay? I really think you've got till probably the end of, well, second or third week in July, the dust settles a little more, so that you'll feel like you're more in a balanced ground. Do you understand this?
Okay.
Because you're really, you know, when you're in the midst of change and it feels like turmoil, you don't get your head on straight. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Because you're rocking and rolling with whatever's going on. But it, like I said, in the middle of July, things settle down for you, and it really opens new doors for you. And it makes you really kind of let go of the past. You're kind of a person that for a while has been carrying a lot of stuff that doesn't belong to you. Okay? Yeah.
Like for what? Like,
I would say that they want to talk about childhood with you. They say that a lot of your belief systems were centered around your parental belief systems more than necessarily your own.
Well, yeah, that's how I used to think
yeah.
in the past.
Yeah, so that's what you're letting go of. So that's a little bit of the ball and chain that's totally going to be released by June. So by July, then you make real good career decisions every part of your life based on you instead of old stuff. Okay?
Yeah, because I'm thinking about doing some sort of career change.
Yeah, you are. You're going to hop careers. It's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because you've been stuck for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, done with it. So lots of new beginnings. So I like July. I'd really embrace July because it sets you free. It opens new doors, and you're less stuck in the world. Also, is there a James or Jamie or James around you?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, pay attention to that name. It's going to be important in the future. It's either James or Jamie.
James?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I heard it.
I used to work with a James. This is in the back.
Yeah, I think this is in the future. I think this is some name in the future, huh?
Okay.
Okay. So it's like you just need to dust off everything. Be okay that you feel unsettled right now, because in July when you jump, it's going to be a good jump.
Do you have an idea, like, what you think I should get more involved in, steer in more? Because I have an idea, but I'm not sure.
I think it's going to come to you. I don't think you have to go looking, hon.
It's going to come to me, really?
Yeah, I really think here's the deal. When you decide you really deserve it, it'll happen. Because you're still struggling with, oh, my God, I better not do it. And if you can let go of that, then you'll jump, and it'll be a great landing.
Okay,
and I feel like it comes to you. I don't feel like you have to look at this. I look for this. I really feel like it comes by. You're talking to somebody, and it's like word of mouth. Oh, maybe you should go check this out and, you know, apply for this thing, and boom. So I like those kind of jobs, you know, because then you don't have to go sweat bullets looking for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about getting into, like, in computers, but I'm not sure.
I think it'll be computers because it looks like an office type thing setting. So
oh, yeah.
I think it's a good place to go. Yeah, you're done with where you are. You've been bored. Like I said, two years. You've been there 2 years too long. Yeah, you know, you're just tired of it. So good luck with the new one.
Okay.
Lots of blessings.
I have a quick question. You study, I guess, about Edgar Cayce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I notice a certain different people and Edgar Cayce talk about as far as future global, you know, whether it be catastrophe or certain events. There's certain people that see, like, certain parts of the West Coast being gone.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's kind of misinterpreted some of the Edgar Cayce stuff.
Okay.
Because if you go back, you know, people who do research, they take what works for them, you know what I mean? So a lot of the things sometimes, and I'm not saying all authors, but some authors, you go in and take bits and pieces out of the archives of Edgar mm-hmm. Cayce stuff. But in most of Edgar Cayce's work, if you go and look at it absolutely in the archives, you know, his actual written stuff, it'll say, will you change it? So a lot of the gloom and doom was there, given that this is a possible future if we continue in this moment of where we were in that time period. And I think we've made global changes, you know, consciousness-wise. So really what you see that that was written in the 1940s, before Edgar Cayce died, have been changed, I really believe that, by our consciousness. And even if you talk to David Michael Scallion, who was the big gloom and doomer, you know, California should have already floated off to another universe by now, even he admitted that because of our consciousness change, that has changed. Because the truth is we're co-creators with God. God is all it is. You know, our conscious thoughts create every day for us. The bad thing is most of the day we co-create crap for ourselves, right? Because we don't get up and say, I'm going to have a great day. I choose to create in this way. And that's one reason I think the new DVD on The Secret is so important. It really is talking about the law of attraction and being conscious about our thoughts. And if you go back and research, if you become a member of the ARE, you have access to the Edgar Cayce's files. You will read where many times when he channeled this about the gloom and doom, about the earth changes and catastrophes, afterwards it said, will you change it? In other words, are we going to be interreactive? Are we going to choose not to do global warming? Hello.
Yes, but at the same time, I don't see too many people really changing. So, I mean, you see people changing, it's obvious, but as a whole, you know, as a planet-wise,
I have to disagree. And the only reason is I've been in this work publicly for over 25 years, and the consciousness of, you know, 5 years ago, you wouldn't even have heard The Secret be on national TV and in the news and be something mainstream people would look at.
Right.
So, you know, even 10 years ago, they were talking about global warming, and now all of a sudden we're really getting on it, you know. So I do think the consciousness is changing.
Yeah, but isn't I pretty much think it's all because of the sun. I don't think we have anything involved with it. That's all just propaganda, political thing.
I have to tell you, you can't be metaphysical and be mundane at the same time. It's a conflict of words and beliefs.
Well, if
it's global warming, if it's the sun, whatever it is, we are part of that.
We're part of it. It's not our fault.
But it's proven. It is. We have to take personal responsibility. Everything in this universe we interact with, hon, they have proven. They've done a scientific study based on work Einstein started, that if you move a certain kind of molecule in a contained area University back east, and Berkeley has the other atom that's been split, it will affect each other. So everything
affected the sun.
Everything. Absolutely.
No.
We affect everything.
I mean, you could say that.
And it's proven if we release gases into the atmosphere is affected by that. I mean, that's a scientific fact. That's not me being woo-woo. That's, you know, for a reaction, there's a reaction, you know. There are some immutable laws.
I don't know how we're going to stop the sun from going cuckoo. I don't know.
Well, I think you stop it like you stop everything. You change your thought about that. We can be part of the answer, part of the problem. If we choose to live in fear, we will create more fear.
No, I'm not in fear at all.
No, but I meant by saying you just said to me that how are we going to stop the sun from going crazy?
Yeah, I think it's a scientific thing. That's my opinion.
Would you agree that everything is energy?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, then everything is energy and our thoughts are energy. Then thoughts affect things. That's why scientists now do double-blind experiments, because they found out the thoughts of the scientists doing the experiment can affect the outcome of that experience. And so if it can affect an experiment, it can affect the sun. So, you know, we have a responsibility to choose. I don't see the sun going cuckoo. And I'm laughing about it, but I'm serious about it, really, truly. Because we have to start taking responsibility to put energy, prayer, if you will, or meditation, positive thoughts in the world we want for the future. We can either have a world of fear, oh my God, you know, the sky is falling, Chicken Little.
Yeah.
And Michael Scallion, because for a few years, Michael David Scallion and the Edgar Cayce and everybody, I mean, they, you know, Nostradamus, they went all through all the people who were preached gloom and doom. Revelation's coming. How many times have we heard the earth is coming to an end from Revelation?
Yeah, right.
And then the day comes, and guess what? The sun rises the next day, and lo and behold, the Earth is okay.
Well, the reason why I'm thinking about that, and you know, to the side, is because the leaders we have in this world are just, you know, pretty much arrogant and pretty much don't care.
All the more reason to pray for them.
You know.
All the more the reason to pray for change. You know, we have change. You know, I'm going to say his name wrong, Barack Obama. I always say his name wrong.
I don't know about that guy.
but he is a beginning of a change. He is a person that seeks peace, has a more balanced view of the world. You know, I'm just saying there are different political beginnings versus what we've got.
Well, there's definitely change. I think that the change also changes people not trusting the political parties anymore.
That will facilitate change. I think the biggest thing Edgar Cayce really talked about is that the world is going to change as we know it. And they talk about 2012. And I think that that's true. In fact, I hope to do a whole show on the Mayan calendar and the change in 2012. There's a new book out on it that is actually available through the ARE. At EdgarCayce.org.
I thought 2012 would be like we're being visited. I mean, I think we've been visited already, but I think it's like a big... That's just my opinion. I don't know. That's what I thought it would be.
Well, we could have all the above. Who knows, you know?
You know, it could be many
times. I really believe, though, too, it's a change in consciousness and how people perceive everything. I think it's begun now with, you, like you said, the mistrust of government. I think all humans have decided war is not working for anybody.
No.
You know, I think the consciousness of the planet at large is changing to shift to personal responsibility. And once we get that we have a personal responsibility with the co-creator of God, whatever, insert your favorite deity, then things will change. Because if I said to a Catholic, for instance, you don't have to go to your priest or your church. You can go straight to God. That would scare them, wouldn't it? It would pretty much change their world as they know it.
I guess people... Well, yeah, I guess it would. I guess, but more people get more open-minded, I guess, in a sense, which is good.
So I think, you know, we're going to see lots of different changes and decisions about things, about belief systems. And
but there's always problems whenever there's changes. I don't know if you know that.
I'm sorry, say again?
Whenever science or just people in general, whenever you either change culture or whatever happens, you're always going to go into rough stages. You would agree?
I would say most people go into panic when their world changes.
Well, there's going to be problems. That's what I think. And then once you get through that step, I think maybe people and the rest of the world will be better. But I think there's going to be that big section where you got to get over that hump, you know?
I think anytime anybody has to face their unknown, it makes them nervous.
Whenever there's a change in anything, you're going to go through a rough time, you know, in anything. And then once you go through a rough time, I guess, then that's good. I don't know.
I think that's your belief system. I honor it.
Yeah.
But I choose not to do rough times anymore. I've done all of them I ever wanted to.
Oh, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I choose not to want to do it. But
change comes now, I choose to embrace it and say, dear Spirit, show me what's next for me.
Yeah, you like to think of positives. You know, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's our belief system. Our BS catches us every time. Because if we came from a belief system that you got to work hard, there's never enough, and change, you know, disaster comes with change or fear comes with change, then of course that's going to be your norm and that's what you're going to be attracted to. That's why I said our conscious thoughts is, you know, for you, you're coming to a change. I'd say I take this change easy, effortlessly, with abundance, with joy. I would choose those for a change because I don't think your old belief system served you so well, you know. I don't think you liked them so well. So embracing something really new is wonderful.
Right.
So okay. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Call-ins always give us so much more to think about, but it's true. I do hope to, in the future, bring in someone to talk about 2012 and the Mayan calendar, you know, stops then and what is in the future, because the one constant is change for everybody. Also, if anyone else has anything they'd like to discuss, if they would like to call in and talk about the near-death experience, if you've had one, I'd love to share it with my audience. Personal experiences, especially on this particular subject, are always good to be able to share with people. I think it's very interesting. One of the people that I talked to that had a near-death experience was an older man who had had a heart attack when he was about, I think he was 64. And he was a very structured person. Pretty much I'd call him an atheist until his near-death experience. And when I talked to Doug about his near-death experience, he was very interesting to me because he had been a construction person, so they're an attaboy, good old boy, tough guys. And when he talked about his near-death experience, it was so amazing to me. And the person I know, the Doug I know now, is so different than he said the Doug before his heart attack. And that is that he was nurturing and caring to his family. He was very attentive. He was a calm person. And he said, before that he had been very much kind of a good old boy, kind of rough construction worker. The job and a few beers after work were more important and all of those things. And really, he said his near-death experience gave him a quality of life that he had never had and would probably not have ever enjoyed had he not had that experience. That really made him soul search at such a core level that he was forever changed. And it really, the people he worked for didn't know what to do with him because he was so different, and it was difficult at first to him adjust to things. And he actually owned a construction company by the time he had his heart attack because he was in his, 64. And so he learned to treat the people that worked under him and to try and instill in these people that, don't go have the beers after work, go home to your family, that quality time, that connection to your family and to have a spiritual life, not necessarily perhaps with a religion, but to have a spiritual life, which meant to love your family, to have time for people, to be considerate of people that had less than you, to be helpful, and that you didn't have to be mean or gruff or demanding about people that worked with you. You could just consider them in a more kindly way, which was totally foreign to him. And for me, I would have never guessed this man had this whole other life, really, before the near-death experience. Because the person that I had met was very spiritual, had a very much, thought of what it would be like now to the afterlife, was a committed person dedicated to a spiritual life, and very, very kind, and to really went out of his way to really, in a way, pay it forward, which I think is another indicative thing that I thought was interesting. The movie Pay It Forward really speaks to the core of, if you had a life review, and after I had read Daniel Brinkley's book, Saved by the Light, and I read it really when it first came out, so I was much younger, I really started a habit of every day doing a life review. I'm not going to wait till I get to the end of my life. I really try every day to do a life review. How have I helped the world? How have I wounded the world? Who have I hurt today? And if I've hurt someone, how can I heal that hurt? How can I start praying about that situation, or can I call that person and get forgiveness and work through the issue? Sometimes you can and sometimes you can't work through it at that moment because you're dealing with whatever brought that up. And sometimes when you do that daily life review, you find out that you reacted to someone that has nothing to do with them. It's a situation that you are wounded from in your past and that you have not healed. And they just happen to push that ouch button and waken something in you, and then you reacted out of woundedness, and it's a sad situation. And one of the books that I really think helps with this kind of situation of the forgiveness situation is Everyday Grace by Marianne Williamson. If you have not read that book, I highly recommend that book. I carry one in my car. I have one in my office, and I've probably given away 30 copies of that book. That book really helps you deal with any hidden woundedness, not being good enough, how to deal with forgiveness, getting forgiveness sometimes for yourself. I think that's the hardest thing. And as I was talking about before the caller called in, and thank you for calling in, is suicides. I have, over the years, worked with so many people who have had people in their life do suicides, and the people who are left behind are so wounded. They're dealing with, first of all, the cleanup of their actual situation. What did they do wrong? How could they have stopped this? Why didn't they see it coming? Why couldn't they, you know, all the woulda, shoulda, couldas? And at some point, they get to a point of forgiveness of that they didn't have, I mean, obviously if they could have helped, they would have, and that they didn't see it coming, they get to a level of forgiveness on this. But sometimes then they'll say the person visits them, and the person comes trying to get forgiveness for what they did to the person, how their suicide affected those left behind. And in most suicide cases, the people here have forgiven. And it takes a while for the soul who committed the suicide on the other side to forgive themselves, to get that obviously there was something within their pattern of their life experience that they chose that action, and then they have to work through the reaction of that. And there are so many angels, guides, masters, healers around these type of people helping them work through that. And so after a certain amount of time of being in what I call the cosmic hospital, they then move forward from that into a life in the spirit world of development and usually service. Service to other people who have had this kind of experience, and they help them move on through that stuckness and that woundedness that comes from suicide. So, if you look in your local listings or look on the web for near-death experiences, you will get the opportunity to see if there are any chapters of that association in your town. If you go to my website, which is www.angelscribe.com, we will try and have the near-death website. I apologize, I don't have it in front of me tonight. Up there, that's the one for Seattle. And then we will try and find links so that you can find for your own city or town. If you've had a near-death experience, I think it's very important to sometimes go and hear some of these people do talks and lectures on this as it helps you process your experience. And then to be able to talk about it, to talk about it to your family, to talk about it to other people who have had the experience, because often when Raymond Moody's book came out, he was inundated with hundreds of thousands of letters of people who had this experience, and they were so relieved to know that they weren't crazy, that there was actually, you know, a name for it, and there was actually things going on around it. So I'm hoping in the next few weeks before this symposium that I will be able to have Kimberly Clark Sharp on the show. She is going to be at a symposium for the ARE in Seebeck, Washington, July the 4th through the 8th. And you can probably find out more about that on www.edgarcasey.org's website. And or there's a local, I was looking for the local website. I will try and find that for you. Again, you can check my website, which is www.angelscribe.org. And we will link you to that information in case you wanted to go to this symposium. I think one thing that we talk about often on my show, probably, and a lot of people may be tired of hearing it, but truly it is personal responsibility. In most esoteric metaphysical writings, you will find that the most important element is our soul evolution, and our soul responsibility, and how we choose as a conscious person or entity to interact with everything and everybody in our environment. That's what makes our soul path. People will call me and say, you know, Tara, tell me what my soul path is. Tell me what I should do, you know. Tell me my mission. And I'll say, you know, if you look down and your feet are on the ground, pretty much you're on your path. The truth is, if you're here in a human body, if you're still breathing, spirit is taking you towards your path. Now, you may have some things you came in here to clean up first, or you may have some things to learn to build the strength of character, to pack your spiritual toolbox so that you then can begin your mission. Most foundations for spiritual missions in this realm and dimension is love. This particular planet or dimension, it's my understanding from spiritual work, is one of the most amazing dimensions that has such a variety of ways to experience love. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Ryan. I'm calling from Issaquah, Washington.
Hi, Ron. Can you move your mouthpiece a little closer to the phone so I can hear you a little better?
Let me. Is this better?
Yep, that's better. So, what questions do you have? Hello, Ron. I don't know if we lost him or not. Hopefully, he'll call back. Hello. Yes, the famous I've effect electronic equipment again. I apologize. I hope he can be reconnected and call back. And we can find out what his question was. What I was talking about before his call is that we, if you're in this dimension, it's to experience love in all its forms. And, you know, when you think about love, love is an amazing journey. And whatever, whether you're loving your cat or you're loving your family members that you came in with, or you find spiritual people by choice. Hello?
Hi, I'm sorry you got disconnected.
That's okay. Hi. What's your question?
I guess I'm wanting to learn so much about this stuff. I mean, it's not all new to me, but, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I guess I'd like to know what, you know, What is the other side? What's it like? I mean, what do we do there? I mean, and why are we here? I guess those are some basic questions.
Okay, so I'll try and answer it in a wide variety of ways because there's so many wide variety of answers because every individual soul will experience the other side in their own version of the truth, but there are commonalities. So if you read Edgar Cayce, he talks quite a bit about, you know, the other side and other dimensions, because we're certainly not alone. There's many layers of dimensions. When I tend to talk about the other side, I'm really talking about where you go from my perspective, which, thank God, I found other books that also speak of it, which is wonderful. And some of those will be listed on my website. But it is a dimension where we are pure energy, which is what our core soul is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? So when we leave this body, we just leave this physical shell behind. We have an etheric body that we take to the other side. And if you are going and you haven't had a lot of trauma, like long sickness or a belief system issue that you don't believe in an afterlife and things, then the transition is fairly smooth, and usually you're greeted by loved ones, angels, guides, masters, and people. And you go through sort of the life review, an assimilation of understanding and adjusting to that energy. Then at that point, from my work, I can only speak from my work, you have the opportunity. You can come back and communicate with your loved ones. Then you get busy working on the other side because you have jobs over there. You have a period of learning over there just like you experience here.
Okay, so, I forgot the question I was going to ask you about that.
Well, we have many job descriptions, like, you know.
Well, I guess what I don't like about this side that we live in is we have to go through a really tough school. I mean, everything is based on higher education, and I feel a lot of times it's very discriminatory to certain people because they can't afford it or for some reason they can't go through it. So, I mean, I feel, sometimes I feel kind of frustrated not getting the same opportunities sometimes. I mean, are there opportunities there? I mean,
well, everything, like I was telling the other person that called in, everything is a conscious choice. And it's really hard, when you wake up to being more spiritual, it's hard to take responsibility that for some reason if we looked in your background, in your belief system, in what you grew up with, there must have been a limitedness, okay,
mm-hmm.
or feeling there's not enough. And
right.
so by those actions, we innately draw that to us. If I feel there's not enough money or enough opportunities or enough educational things, what am I vibrating to? I'm vibrating that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the law of attraction in the universe, not my law, cosmic law, will bring that to me. But the moment I say, you know, dear spirit, provide for me, I don't care how you do, as long as you do, and I'll show up, then doors will open. If you see yourself not limited, but that, you know, you can have whatever you want, and you start putting that energy, and it takes time to shift your energy because you've owned the old belief systems a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you change your belief system, say, every time I turn around, I have to tell you, lately I have been so lucky. I went back to my old thought pattern of, you know, everything I enter, I win, and I have been winning things like crazy lately.
Mm.
But the shift I had to get back into, wait a minute, when did I get so that I thought I wasn't lucky again? So we fall back in that autopilot sometimes
mm-hmm.
because it's our comfort zone. So as you shift into knowing you deserve it, that there's no limitations, you can have anything you want, and pursue it with not anger that, you know, injustice that you haven't had it before, but absolute joy, then it shifts for you. And it's not, it's just the law of attraction. And you ask your angels, your guides, your masters, hey, on the other side, hey, I want that opportunity. I want that job, or I want that educational opportunity, and I know I can do it. I know that I'm ready for it. I'm mature enough for it. I'm supported by it. Then those shifts happen. And as metaphysical people, it's hard to take that leap of faith because we want to blame somebody else, you know. We don't want to have to do all the digging of the with a shovel ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's truly the way it works. And when you practice it and you unfold it and you watch it, it really happens that way. And the problem is that 90% of the time, we're leaking our creative energy on what we don't have. We spend a lot of time peeing and moaning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wah, you know, I don't get paid as much as so-and-so. And so we keep recreating it because that's where we're leaking it all on. So it takes a shift of consciousness and personal responsibility. And I tell you, really, truly, if you practice this in 30 days, something will shift and change. It just happens. It does. I've done it with more than one class, many, many people.
Well, talking of classes, do you offer classes, or is there places that, you know, that you teach?
I do teach. Right now I'm teaching a development class out at Camp Edgewood. It's a spiritualist camp in Milton, Washington. But I will be doing some different workshops this summer. If you go to our webpage, we try to keep it posted on there what I'm doing. I'm actually going back to Maine and doing a week long of doing readings and then a workshop and circles.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of really good. I will actually, if you email us through the website, I will try and find a teacher close to you.
Okay, yeah. That would be nice, yeah.
Because it doesn't have to be me. That's one thing I want to really be clear about, you know. I love that there are so many. This is a great time to be alive. Thank you, God, Spirit, because so many people are awakening metaphysically. And today, more than ever, there's some really, really good resources out there. And before, my time is almost up. Go to your local library and get anything by John Holland,
mm-hmm.
okay? He has a really good resource on beginning metaphysics. I think he's wonderful. Anything by Ted Andrews, he has some really good basic getting in touch with your spirit guides, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good core place to begin because both of those teachers really talk about protection. So you don't just 1-800 any spirit, but you get positive spirits. You get a good foundation before you even begin a class. Don't forget your local libraries. Some of these are books on tape, so which are wonderful. You can play them in the background when you're cooking dinner.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good place to begin. And, of course, any Edgar Cayce things you can get your hands on.
Okay.
Lots of blessings.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your info.
Absolutely. So it's that time again. This hour flew by so fast. I hope to have Kimberly Clark Sharp back on another show. And next week I have Nancy Warner, and she is another clairvoyant. And so save up your questions. We're going to have her talk about how she works and how she gets her information, and then we'll take calls. So if you want the opportunity to get a mini reading by a wonderful another clairvoyant, I love sharing my show with other clairvoyants, because you know what? There's enough for everybody. Yeah, the world is full of wonderful abundance. So remember to let your heart light shine, to light your way and the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of angels. Till next week, lots of blessings.
Angel mystic Atira was born with an amazing gift. Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic.
Sand. She got things.